Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages.
And especially you, fat, sweaty wrestling fans. This bout has a 30-minute time limit.
This contest is set for one fall.
Seriously, why even say one fall? It's always one fall.
Oh, you didn't know?
Welcome to Shoot Radio, the only pro wrestling show that threatens its fans with figure five leg locks, triple axe handles, and large packages. Wait, what?
Woo, woo, woo! You know it!
Let's move on. Now introducing the tag team champions from the not-so-mean streets of suburban Toronto. This is The Chris and his partner. And yes, I mean partner like that. From the well-landscaped subdivisions of suburban Chicago, it's Johnny P. Get ready, wrestling fans, to sit through this utterly ridiculous gimmick match known simply as Shoot Radio.
Episode 8 of Shoot Radio. Shoot Radio is the wrestling podcast talking about anything and everything. Stuff from the past, stuff from the 90s Attitude Era, onto the future, independence, WWE, whatever you want. That's what we talk about. We pick a cool topic and we just go in depth. My name is Johnny P. With me is the Chris.
And today we're going to talk about the ladies.
Ooh, sexy lady. So women wrestlers, notably not so much valets, correct?
Well, women in wrestling.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, is okay. what I wanted to cover, because you know this is there's going to be points in this podcast where we're going to have to choose our words carefully, I think.
What do you mean?
Like, well, just
not calling women like broads or bitches. Or...
Yeah, like it's a wrestling's just one of these weird backwards industries that's like, you know, about 50 years in the past when it to where it should be in terms of its treatment of women.
Only 50 years? I would say maybe.
At least.
At least 50. How long ago was it when women and men used to fight against each other? That was in WWE, right? But like 90s, that would happen sometimes.
And I remember on the station that carried it up here in Toronto, they would actually, like, if there was male-on-female violence, they would actually... You'd get the audio, but it would go to canned crowd shots. Like they couldn't actually show it on TV in the late 90s. Like it was.
Yeah, I didn't even know that. Wow, interesting.
Yeah, it was. That's why I say like it occupies this funny spot, because if you're watching an episode of CSI, I mean, just within the fiction of that world, I mean, you see much worse violence than a suplex.
Right.
or at least the implication of it as well. We're getting pretty deep already, but
So going back on topic with the women in wrestling, so you've got women wrestlers, you've got valets. You've got valets that then become wrestlers while they don't have really a whole lot of wrestling ability. And then they kind of get relegated to the hair pulls, the kind of the shitty version of a bulldog. What's the one where they spin around? It's probably not even a real name, whatever, where they grab each other's arms and then they just kind of spin and then somebody falls, then they both fall.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
They're not like real moves, but if there is some element of heat in the match and something to kind of get the crowd going besides just, gratuitous TNA, they can kind of get away with it. Then other times it's, boring chants or time to get a beer or go to the bathroom or something. So it's kind of interesting, the whole dynamic of women in wrestling. It's a good point that you brought that up, kind of an overall message. Or, for example, as far as wrestlers go in women's division or divas or whatever you want to call it, there's really not a whole lot of feuds. It's kind of just, okay, you against you. And you look kind of mean, so you're going to be the heel. And you've got blonde hair, so you're the face. And there's no real story most of the time. There's not really a whole lot of a ring general. Like, not a whole lot of in-ring kind of story either.
Kind of depends where you look. Because if you look in modern promotions like Chikara, or even Ring of Honor, that's the place, I think, where, if you want to see women's wrestling, like women... in there as wrestlers telling a story in the same way that we're most accustomed to seeing men do. that's the place where you want to see it. And it can be really good because there's men and women are different. I mean, there's storylines that between two women are just easier to tell and stuff like that. Like one of the favorite examples I have, and this was probably, in my opinion, it was the last good or the last really good storyline that WWE did that was strictly a women's storyline, not just a storyline that had a woman essentially as a prop. It was, do you remember when Mickie James was first introduced and she was playing that stalker,
cheerleader?
That stalker fan?
I remember her as like a cheerleader, right?
I don't really remember her as a cheerleader, but what I remember from that angle was that she was this stalker fan and she was like obsessed with Trish Stratus.
That's right. So she dress up as her kind of follower, and that was, yeah, I think later on she eventually had a bit of a name for herself, you know, with sort of a gimmick. But yeah, she was kind of a stalker fan. Yeah.
And that's a woman being stalked and a man being stalked. Like, that's two completely different stories. And
oh, yeah.
The way that they told that story was really cool because they weren't having her do anything overtly heelish, which I think is good because I'm of the opinion that the best heels are the ones that truly believe that what they're doing is good and right. But I remember this one moment, and this was, you and I won't know if this was planned, but I mean, it was the kind of thing where it was probably just somebody taking really good advantage of a moment in time. I might be getting this backwards, but they were having some kind of confrontation. I don't think they were having a match, but if I'm remembering this correctly, Mickey hit Trish, and Trish got a legit bloody nose from it.
Ah, okay.
And Mickey leaned in, and because she was doing this creepy stalkering, or like, she kissed her, and then Mickey pulls away, and it was just one of those things where everything was just perfect. The camera shot, you see Mickey pulling away, and she's got like blood on her face.
Oh, from the kiss?
Yeah, it was just like, that was just one of those moments where, you know, everything kind of fell into place, and
But those moments are few and far between, unfortunately, with a lot of women's matches, especially in the major promotions. You know, you mentioned like, you know, Chikara or Ring of Honor, those kind of independents. You're right. You're going to see more traditional wrestling and storylines with female characters than you do in WWE and I would say even in TNA as well. What was the one before that was WCW, you know, same kind of thing where it's the women are used in a completely different way. And when I say used, I literally mean they're used because it's not necessarily why they got into wrestling. A lot of them did pay their dues in some independence and learn how to work a good match. And then they're in a bra and panties match when they make it to the big time. The one thing I will say, when there is kind of like a series of your basic shitty women's matches in WWE, at least they keep them short. they're like no more than four minutes long. So it's like, well, it was a kind of a shitty match, but you want to get these girls on TV for some FaceTime. All right, let's get them in and out real quick, 4 minutes. And so it's like, well, at least we're
that's,
not having...
That's fine when it's all they can do and when it's, you know, the popcorn match. But what kind of bothers me is when you have, I mean, your Kelly Kellys or whatever, I mean, they're of the world. They're just, I mean, they're there because of the way they look and no other reason.
Right, of course.
But when you have, and, you know, that's not unique to wrestling, but then when you have, you know, somebody like a Beth Phoenix or a Natalya or a Gail Kim, like somebody that's legitimately talented and can take part in the athleticism and storytelling and gets it. Because they're kind of painted, the women wrestlers or divas are painted with such a broad brush that, you know, there's no distinction there, and they can't achieve that. That's what kind of annoys me.
Well, that's why with WWE, I mean, I think the women's division or divas, whatever you want to call it, for as long as I can remember, probably since the 80s, which. Whatever, we'll get to that as kind of a joke as that was, but it's always kind of been that blurred line of we got just the hot girls and then we got the wrestlers, and still everybody was like even keel though, where Kelly could be a world champion and Beth Phoenix could be jobbing to somebody, And it's like, you know, that's not believable at all. But then somebody could easily say, well, look at the men. You think Santino could, you know, beat up, you know, Ahmed Johnson or what, you know, different eras, whatever. I think I'm a big guy. But, you know, it's like you still have that suspension of disbelief anyway. But it just seems like it makes sense for the guys to say, oh, yeah, that guy had Big Show's number that night. Yeah, he took him out. Whereas with the women, it's almost like every match I see in WWE, especially with someone like Beth Phoenix, how is she not winning every single match? She's, you know, or Natalya, or, you know, or even, you know, when Trish was around, she had great success. So I kind of, you know, she kind of had a bit of a dominant era. So I'm glad she did. But someone like Gail Kim, even, you know, was also a pretty good wrestler. So, but they're not winning. Sometimes they get a push, other times they don't. And there's really no rhyme or reason to say, yes, this girl who's a sports model or, you know, athletic model is going to now go over this female wrestler and we're supposed to buy it.
And I think another challenge that women wrestlers have, and I'll group, you know, the sports models and the divas and everything, I'll just use the generic term women wrestlers. And you know, this is a societal thing. This is not unique to wrestling, but when you contrast it with males in the, you know, participating in a storyline, you can have a guy that's not really good looking or 100% in shape be a sympathetic baby face. You know, a guy like a Dusty Rhodes who's, you know, fat.
Whoa, what do you mean? Oh, come on, man. Dude, he's got a pretty face. Come on.
But you can fat. Have...
nice.
Yeah, I'm so judgmental. But you have a guy like that who's, you know, not the 6'5", abs, tribal tattoos, cookie cutter mold, he can still be a baby face. Whereas when you have a woman in that role, it's a lot harder. I mean, it's not right, but it's a lot harder to cast her in a sympathetic baby face role. Like, I mean, you look at the few standout female wrestlers, at least in, you know, recent history in North America, that have been positioned. You know, I'm thinking of Rhonda Singh, who had her probably greatest level of national exposure as Bertha Faye in WWE. I mean, an overweight woman that's not cover material, it's sad to say, but that's an instant heel. And I think that's a real limiting aspect to women's wrestling that's unfortunate.
Yeah, and she, you know, I think that's also like an era thing too, because when was her kind of time? Like mid-90s probably? That kind of went over in WWE in those, what did you call them in another episode, like the lean years or something?
Yeah.
You know, ironic. That's not nice.
But, oh.
No, it's not nice. I think she also passed away too, so double not nice, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I mean, is that went over back then, and that never fly today. That wouldn't fly in the Attitude Era. That wouldn't, you know. So it's, I get what you're saying, but... It's also, you're right, it's a societal thing. Look at Hollywood, you know, look at our famous actresses. And, you know, is Jennifer Aniston really the best actress around? No, she's not. But yeah, she still looks pretty damn good. And it's a different standard. Whereas guys, it's like, wow, this guy's funny. Who cares if he's ugly as shit? You know, and that's just how it is. So I get what you're saying. But when it comes to wrestling, it's kind of... I don't know what you want to call it, a mirror on society, but a mirror on entertainment, we should say.
Yeah.
So you look at some of those, and there were some, you know, going back to the idea of some good wrestlers, you know, Lita had a lot of good success, or Amy Dumas. I remember watching her in ECW.
I never liked Lita. I don't know what it was. I mean, at the time, I mean, I was, because she stood out, she was something, but I don't know what it was. I mean, you can't argue with her success. She was very popular, and, you know,
She had sex with Edge in the ring too. Remember that?
They brought
a bed in the ring. And they're like, all right, tonight on Raw, Edge and Lita are gonna have sex. It's just like awesome.
Yeah, like, sure they are.
That's awesome in the ring. Cool. She had a lot of success. She did a, you know, great job. But then for every one of her, then you're gonna have just kind of a, you know, I'm trying to think of another.
Like 10 Alicia Foxes or something.
Yeah, what's funny is it's hard to think of some of the names because they do kind of go one ear out the other. And I was like, oh, you know, or what's her name? Maria Kanellis or something, or Stacey Keibler. And
Maria Kanellis, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off that, but Maria Kanellis, I mean, she's actually a big part of Ring of Honor right now. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, and it's really interesting not to be
too... Is she
too
good?
Not to be... Like, she's not... I don't think she's wrestling as much per se, but she's involved in a storyline where she's in real life, she is the girlfriend of this wrestler named Mike Bennett. Okay. But they're like a heel pairing, and it's amazing to watch her in an environment where she doesn't have to fit the WWE, like, this is what a diva looks like, this is what a diva says, this is what a diva does. Like, she's really having a chance to carve out her own character. So as much as it's easy to dismiss a lot of the WWE divas that you see on the television every week, I think for a lot of them, oh yeah, I'm sure it's just, you know, this is a springboard to get television time, to get your face out there. And hey, yeah, if you're a fitness model and that's your thing, I mean, no better way to do that. But it's interesting to see. I mean, it's true of guys too, but I mean, it's particularly compelling for women just because there's less of them. When you see one of them in a separate environment that, or in a different environment that has an opportunity to make their own way and see them do well. And by contrast, it's always disappointing when you see somebody that comes from that environment where they've got internet wrestling community fame, and then they come to WWE and, you know, they're just reduced to another
mid-carder or
exactly
something.
Or just you know, a piece of eye candy. Like, there's this one female wrestler that's just, she's a wrestler. Like, she's not a diva, she's not a valet, her name's Sarah Del Rey.
Oh yeah, I've heard of her. I've seen some of her work like on YouTube and stuff like that.
Yeah, and you know, she wrestles in Chikara and occasionally Ring of Honor and stuff like that. And I hear sometimes people that are fans of her say, oh, it'd be awesome if she was in WWE, but it's, you know, in the back of my head I'm thinking, I mean, I'm sure it'd be good money for her and good exposure, but I mean, she's likely not going to be able to ply her trade the same way she's accustomed to.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's kind of, you know, it happens with men too, but someone, you know, a female wrestler could be doing very well in the other promotions. You get to WWE and you're right, we're talking a lot of shit kind of about them. It's not really, just to make it clear, it's not so much that's like, oh, I'm saying, you know, Kelly sucks, but it's like, well, that's really what they want her to do, is look super fucking hot in the ring and try to pull off a couple of moves, but not really, and just still look good. Like, so we'll never really know. Maybe she could wrestle. Maybe, you know, she, you know, she kind of would like to work towards it, but they said, you know what, don't bother with this. I'd rather have you spend your time, you know, doing fan meet and greets and stuff and just looking good. So you're right. We're kind of, it's not that we're putting them down, but we're putting their role down, you know, and it's so strange too, because you have, you know, like a Beth Phoenix or Natalia or these women that are very good wrestlers, and then their gimmick is they're a good wrestler. They're, you know, Natalia was trained in the Heart Dungeon. She's, you know, and that's cool. That's their gimmick. But then you have
But then they make her fart. Like, that, right. I just don't understand.
What, you saying she never farted before that moment?
No, never.
Girls don't fart, right? But
sorry, yeah, I didn't mean to derail you there.
No, I don't even know. Hey, when I start thinking about farts, man, yeah, now I gotta go. No, but it's the idea of, you're right, she's promoted as a real wrestler, you know, a technical wrestler, and then a fart gimmick, and that could easily make her a laughing stock. And then you take someone who's more of the kind of traditional looking
fitness model.
Model looking girl. I don't want to, you know, kind of, you know, insinuate anything, but, you know, model looking girl. And then regardless of if she has the ability or potential, it's like, nah, fuck it. They're going to be the Bella Twins, and all you're going to do, you're going to cheat in all your matches, and you're going to look cute, and that's it. And maybe they could do some moves. We'll never know, because it's not really written into their characters. So it's kind of fucked up, the whole... You were exactly... You hit it on the head with that, you know, 50 years ago thing, because it's essentially like we're just treating them like, I don't know. Sounds so bad to say.
Chattel. I mean,
it's... Yeah, I mean, it sounds so bad to say. It's not me doing it. I'm not fucking writing it. But it's the way it is, though. It's just like, you know what? You're tits and ass. And if you can add something to the men's match, cool. If you can't, whatever, you better look cute. We'll put you in a bra and panties match. We'll put you in a fucking jello match where Jerry Lawler can, you know, bust a nut in his tights, you know, about it. And, you know, and that's it. And that's your role. And if you're cool with that, well, then more power to you. But someone like Maria Kanellis, she's getting a bit of a nice second chance at a wrestling career now in a different way, though.
For sure. Now, just to kind of dovetail into a different topic here, what are your opinions on some of the women that we've seen that are specifically positioned because they don't fit the fitness model profile? Like, I'm thinking, you know, women like, I mean, it's easy to laugh, but thinking of women like Chyna or mm-hmm. Nicole Bass, yep. or more recently Karma or Awesome Kong, as she was known before that. Like, just the either women that are gone beyond fitness models, like more like, you know, the roided up look, or women that are, you know, I don't want to use a term as harsh as obese, but you know, like someone like Awesome Kong, who's, you know, a bigger woman,
yeah,
in more like a wrestler role.
It's weird because take Chyna for example. It's such an intriguing thing with Chyna, and I've never been a Chyna fan really. I respect, you know, what she's done, but it's just not, you know, I've never really been much of a Chyna fan. But I thought it was so weird that she's going for the Intercontinental title against male wrestlers. And it's kind of like, eh, that's cool. It's like, well, it's still guys hitting girls. Oh, but it's cool because it's Chyna, you know. And it's like a different set of rules applied to her. Though I think there was probably one or two times, I'm just going by memory here, it's been a long time, obviously. There's probably one or two times where Chyna, you know, said, I'm gonna go into the women's division. I'm just going to clean house and beat everyone's ass. And then she did. And it's kind of like, well, how would that happen in the men's, you know, arena? You know, you would never have just like, oh, hold on, I don't want to go against this guy. This guy is like an actual tough guy. It's like, aren't they all supposed to be tough guys? So you've got this woman going completely against the mold. I kind of liked her. I know it kind of held her back, but I kind of liked her as that bodyguard role in DX. I thought that was kind of cool because it was like DX was such a rebellious faction of the company. We're going to do what we want, say what we want. Shit, we got a female bodyguard too. And just kind of another weird thing about their stable. And then she starts wrestling and it's apples and oranges from the other women. And so a new set of rules has to be not established, but kind of just what the norm is. Like, oh yeah, nah, China's different. China goes with the guys. She's going to feud with X-Pac. But the other girls, they're gonna feud for the women's title. And so I never quite understood it. It never sat right with me. I never really liked that much. And I know Chyna's the easiest example because of how long she was around for and how popular she got. But sometimes something similar could be said for, you know, some of the larger women wrestlers where it's almost, oh, that's not fair. It's like, well, no one ever says that in guy matches. No one ever says fighting Mark Henry is not fair. He's too big. So it's really strange. Such a weird dynamic with women wrestlers. You know, it's another level with the fitness model, the wrestler, and then like the big girl or the tough girl. You've got all these different levels.
Yeah, and the thing with China, I mean, China's an easy target now. I mean, just because of the, you know, career choices she's made, and I'll just leave it at that. But, you know,
she's an elementary school teacher now, is that?
Yeah, I think so. She likes to make movies. But
that career. Okay.
Yeah, but, I mean, you can't deny, like, at the time, she was over. I mean, she was positioned well, and she was, I think, the fact that it was something different, she was, even though she was in the men's division, positioned as an underdog. So, I mean, it's just, it's proof that you can do it well. But again, you know, even if you look at Chyna, and just, you know, not to be too superficial, but you look at her appearance from when she debuted as a jacked-up woman, I don't know the extent to which, you know, she had pressure to do this or if she felt this herself, but I mean,
the facial surgery.
Well,
and
yeah,
that.
You look at the way she looked by the end of her WWE run. I mean, she was, and she was positioned and called a diva because, you know, she had all the plastic surgery and everything to make her
well,
look
I call
more
you
like
a diva
that.
Too, though.
Well, yeah.
You're the diva on this show anyway. But, yeah, I mean,
it's just interesting that, like, even if you've initially forged your identity as being sort of the anti-diva. She went through this metamorphosis where by the end she was a sex symbol.
Maybe for you.
But she was, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get what you mean. You know what she did was she got the facial surgery, so she had that kind of masculine chin, right? And she kind of a lot of upper body strength. She slimmed down a lot, I think. She got more slim, you know, still muscular, but not quite as bodybuilder-esque of it all, to try to fit into that mold. And that's actually part of the reason why I don't really like her that much. I really wanted her to stay in that same kind of, I told you, I like her as the bodyguard. I thought she was kind of just a badass, intimidating figure. Like,
I agree.
You can't mess with China. These guys have a female bodyguard. So number one, you can't hit a girl. And number two, she'll kick your ass anyway. And then she all of a sudden decides to go through this metamorphosis of, I'm going to become a diva. I'm going to become, you know, I'm going to go in Playboy, and my moves are now going to be me doing, you know, whatever. Remember her fucking cartwheels or whatever she would do.
Yeah, the handspring elbow.
Handspring. Yeah. Obviously my gymnastics knowledge is quite lacking, but it became, you know, her going against what she originally was doing. And that was another reason I didn't really like her that much. I thought it was kind of a cop out, and she could have stood her ground. I would imagine. I'm sure there was, hey, if you really want to be big, you know, not big, obviously, but like popular, I want to get over with the fans, I need you to do this, 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 and this. She's like, all right, that's cool. So she chose to do those changes, but I think it really, in my opinion, hurt her credibility with some people, especially me, in that.
Well, it killed her character. I mean, I'd go on record saying that. I mean, you can't have, well, I mean, we've said it already. I mean, you had somebody that was, you know, being positioned as a badass and a female, but when you're going posing in Playboy as, you know, a sex symbol. I mean, it's those two generally, I mean, it's tough to have those two images coexisting.
Right. Definitely. So, do you have a favorite female wrestler?
For the current, like an active female wrestler, I would definitely.
Just WWE, just general.
For, well, just in the modern era that's an active female wrestler, I would definitely say Sarah Del Rey, even though she hasn't been in WWE. If I had to pick someone that's, you know, a current nationally exposed wrestler, I would probably say it's tough to pick between Beth Phoenix and Natalya. I think they're both super talented, and, you know, I wish they would get more time on a national platform to be female wrestlers and not just have to coexist with the divas. But in saying that, I don't really know what that would look like, because when you look at the roster of females in WWE, you've got Beth, you've got Natalya. I mean, those are really the only two what I would consider female wrestlers. The rest are just, they're the fitness model types. They're the, like you said earlier, they're out there to look good, maybe further a storyline, do a few moves to fill some time, but, you know, they're not trained in the same extent. But the one female that's, I mean, I wouldn't say she's my favorite, but just in terms of the way that she's contributing to storylines relatively lately that I've been surprised by and impressed with is the woman that goes by AJ in WWE. Yeah,
and obviously it's a bit of a modern reference right now with our you know, our show. And I love AJ. I think she's, you know, a great wrestler and obviously amazingly, you know, cute to me. But yeah, she's got actual wrestling moves, but due to her size, it's kind of like a bit of a limiting factor with some of them. Going to what you were saying with Natalya and Beth Phoenix, do you think that, so let's say they feuded and that became the female feud. That became the match that we watch, you know, week after week, and somebody interferes and what pay-per-view it culminates. Do you actually think the fans would put up with that?
I think, you know, and there's evidence.
WWE fans too.
Sure. I understand. Yeah. You know, I get your question. It's a fair one. I mean, what I would contrast it with is a few years ago, and I mean, again, it's not exactly apples to apples, but in TNA about 3-4 years ago, when Gail Kim and Awesome Kong were doing their program there, and the women were, if I'm remembering correctly, it was Scott D'Amore that was working with training and doing a lot of the booking around the women's storylines. I mean, they had a solid women's division there where you had a woman chasing a title, and they never put them in a main event slot on a pay-per-view, I don't think, but they did put them in the main event slot on an episode of Impact, which was very
interesting,
very well received both by, you know, the relatively casual fans and the hardcores. So I think if you position them correctly, and again, it all has to do with educating the audience. I mean, right now, because even TNA fans, I think, are more of a skewing towards that hardcore fan that's looking for an alternative, as opposed to, you know, the people that the only view they have of wrestling is what WWE presents. They're not looking any further because that's really all they think there is. And I think you would really need to retrain your audience to, and you'd have to position women as competitors, maybe not equal in strength and power to males, because that's a physiological reality. But
sure.
I mean,
well,
but
their own division, though.
I but mean, having that's their own division and having them be competitive amongst each other, I think you could. Again, you know, I'm flip-flopping a lot. I mean, you look at some of the female-only promotions within relatively recent history that have, at least in North America, tried to get off the ground, and it really has, you know, none of them have.
I think about Shimmer. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah, I mean, it's that's a very niche product. You know, I mean, I'm even thinking further back to the early 2000s with, you know, the stuff that Dave McLean did with, you know, WOW and GLOW before that.
Yeah.
But even that, I mean, it's, if you watched any of it, I mean, the goals that they were trying to achieve were a little different, I think.
I remember, I'm so glad you brought up GLOW. I remember probably being like 8 years old and watching GLOW and some Saturday night, and my dad's watching it with me, and he's just like, oh, you know, look at that girl. That kind of, just like a weird kind of like learning about the birds and the bees from watching GLOW. You know, it's like, I don't know why I like this leopard leotard so much, but I really do. And
I'm going to reach for this couch cushion and put it on my lap.
Right. Like, I think this is what my friend told me a boner was, I believe, you know, but, yeah. And it's so weird. Some of that kind of stuff. And, hold on, I lost my train of thought. The GLOW thing, it totally got me thinking different direction. So yeah, so obviously GLOW, I learned a lot about that. But do you honestly think that WWE, of all the promotions, would actually try that kind of, you know, we're going to watch it for competition after we've had this idea ingrained in our heads of WWE, when they show women, it's the puppies, or, you know, I always think about frickin' Lawler, and as longtime Shoot Radio listeners know, I fucking hate him. And it's, he actually makes matters worse every time, you know, oh my God, oh, puppies, you know, and he's freaking out, his orange makeup and spray tan running all over his greasy ass face. And it's, do you think it would ever actually fly when that opinion is not only still there, but it's actually made worse week after week?
A lot would have to change. I mean, it would not be something where one week you have divas, the next week you've got female wrestling. I mean, it would have to be, I mean, we're talking about, you know, months or even years. And I mean, it's a good point. I mean, it comes down to how they're presenting, because I mean, the way that the commentators react for the people that are watching at home, I mean, that's going to, the whole job of a commentator is to sort of educate the audience and, you know, how they're supposed to react. And as much as people like to think they're free thinkers and, you know, they'll form their own opinions, I mean, if a commentator is telling you over and over again that, you know, these women are little more than sex objects, I mean, that's, at least on a subconscious level, that's how you're going to react to them when you see them on the screen. Whereas if you had somebody like with more of a style like a Jim Ross or a Gordon Solie that would put over the fact these women are wrestlers, you know, I mean, they may look good, but, you know, don't kid yourself, you know, they're tough as the men, and, you know, they can,
she can back it up too, you know, that kind of, I could easily see that happening. I think we should have a commentator episode down the road one day, because I do want to kind of pick your brain on that. It's true. I mean, like you said, they're like, I think about commentators as if you're in a movie, watching a movie, and you got one of your friends who's seen the movie already telling you, like, no, the reason why this guy is talking to him is because they're going to kill him later on. Oh, you know, that's, to me, that's like what commentator in pro wrestling, you know? So I like that you brought that up, that they're furthering storylines. They're implanting, oh, this is the name of their finisher. I know that because you fucking said it 20 times. And I like that you brought that up in regards to Divas, because that's, if that's what we're supposed to be educated about, is that Trish Strat or Kelly has nice puppies. That's, you know, first off, I already know that. So I don't need fucking Lawler, you know, again, you know, wetting himself about it. But that's what they want us to think about when we're watching this match. So it would be a complete culture change for that company. I honestly don't see that happening anytime. And I would never want to say never, but I don't see any reason why they would ever want to do that. And on a further note, if I was a female wrestler, you know, I probably wouldn't think of WWE as my end goal. It might not be. In a way, it's kind of like, well, everyone keeps telling me I should go there and that's the big time. But if I know that, it's almost like if you're in an independent band or, you know, an indie band, it's like you signed with a major label and everyone's like, oh, you guys sold out, you suck. In a way, it's something similar. And you want to keep your street cred. Well, maybe you should stick with the independents, or even sometimes TNA, like you said, you know, does treat it a little more real. I don't know, for lack of a better term.
Or a little more seriously.
Yeah.
It's a catch 22 though. I mean, cause you're never gonna, I mean, regardless of what you think of the way that WWE presents professional wrestling, and I'm, you know, in what we see today, I'm highly critical of a lot of what they present, but in terms of people that are doing this to make a living, I mean, in North America anyway, I mean, you're the difference between, I mean, not that I know down to dollars and cents, but I mean, it has to be the case that, you know, the difference between what you make there and what you make anywhere else has to be night and day. So, I mean, it's, if you are somebody like a Sarah Del Rey or a Gail Kim that, you know, wants to be a legit professional wrestler, I think you have to really, I'm not trying to give career advice, but I mean, you have to know what you're in for if you're going to allow yourself to be presented by WWE.
Well, that's, like I said, it's the same thing with bands. If you think about it, if you could make five times more money going from TNA to WWE, which is probably, it's probably about that. It's probably about four or five times the money, just by, again, I don't know anything, but just random stuff I might read on online, which could be bullshit anyway. But if that's like the amount you're talking about, think about it. If you're in a band, or if you're, you know, maybe a local, you know, theater actor that wants to go do this kind of just goofy, you know, slapstick movie, it's happens in a lot of entertainment industries that the big time, where you can make the big money, isn't always what it's cracked up to be. And it may not be every female wrestler's end goal to say, well, I make a decent living right now. Yes, I can make an amazing living, but if I'm not happy with it, it's not worth it. And that could be the case with someone like Sarah Del Rey, where...
Yeah, it comes down to the person and, you know, what fulfills them. I mean, I'm sure there's, you know, like in any business, I mean, there's people that are just doing it. They look at it purely as a business. And, you know, if they could... To bring it back to music, I mean, I think Chuck Berry was quoted as saying, like, you know, if I could make, you know, $100 more a week painting houses, that's what I'd go do. But there's other people that, you know, just do it for the love of the art form. And yeah, I guess it just, I mean, it really comes down to the individual, you know, what are you willing to do? And, you know, a lot of, you know, this is not unique to females either. I mean, I've heard more than one wrestler that's been in WWE say, you know, they're being in WWE, I mean, that's a fulfillment of a childhood dream, you know, kind of a bucket list kind of thing. But they view it as, no matter what I do, I'm not going to be in the position that, you know, a John Cena or The Rock is in terms of the level of acclaim I'll achieve. But if I'm paraphrasing kind of what Colt Cabana often says, if I could have one good run in WWE for 3 years, let's say, where I'm on TV more or less every week and everyone knows my name, he said he could have a whole career leveraging that exposure. So
yeah, I think so. I mean, take someone like a Kofi Kingston or something, where they haven't really won major titles, but they're on TV. Everyone knows who they are over and over again, and they've got this you know, fan base now. And yeah, a female wrestler could obviously shoot for something like that. But again, it's apples and oranges when it comes to WWE, because it's, and that's kind of a good overall theme of this episode, is that there are so many different levels when you say female pro wrestler. Like, what does that mean? Does that mean diva? Does that mean sports model? Does that mean just ass kicker? Does that mean technical wrestler, or all of the above? And with male wrestlers, I could see wanting to just move up and keep going up and up and up. And you could say, yeah, I could stay in the independents and still keep my cred. But hey, look at guys like Daniel Bryan or Chris Benoit or Kurt Angle that have gotten these levels of achievement based on still, quote, keeping it real. And so guys could just be like, oh, look at those guys. They paved the way already for me. I don't have to be this breakthrough, like break out of the Hulk Hogan mode. It's already been done. However, for women, there hasn't been that moment yet where it's been, yes, there's been people like Chyna and Trish and Lita, but the reality is it's still a completely different ballgame when it comes to the women. And it's a tough career move, tough career choice. What would you do? What would you, you know, is that still a goal for you to get to WWE, or is it just not worth it?
Yeah, and it's funny. I heard an interview with Maria Kanellis recently, and she made a really good point. It's that, and she's entitled to make this point because she's in the business. I mean, it's not something that you and I would observe on our own, but what she was saying boiled down to wrestling is the only business where if you're not 100% dedicated to being a wrestler and only doing stuff inside wrestling, you're often not taken seriously, or, you know, you're not perceived as being dedicated. If you have, in any other form of entertainment, if you've got, you know, I'm like, look at a guy like Mark Wahlberg. I mean, he was, you know, Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch,
right,
for all those years, you know, doing top 40 dance music. And now he's pretty highly regarded actor, at least in terms of mainstream box office draw movies. And, you know, nobody ever, I don't think anyone ever says, man, he really sold out on that music career. You know, he didn't have a love of that. Whereas, you know, if you hear that, I mean, I hear wrestling fans say that when, you know, there's a guy like, a guy like Chris Jericho goes off and does his Fozzy thing. I mean, I've heard wrestling fans often say, man, you know, he could be such a better wrestler if he just did that full time and nothing else. And it's just a weird business
it's
in
a,
that
it's
way.
It's a cult. I mean, wrestling's a cult where it's, if you come from wrestling and go into other mainstream media, you're looked down upon. If you are in wrestling and, you know, you're also looked and go to mainstream, you're looked down upon by wrestling fans too. It's such a weird thing. Someone like The Rock, for example.
He's about the only guy that's truly, truly crossed over.
Well, it's still, he's the most crossed over, and I don't want to get off topic on this. So what Maria was saying is totally right. It's very, very true with what she's saying with there. Earlier I asked about one of, you know, your favorites, and if I had to kind of pick mine overall, I probably will say Trish Stratus. I think that, number one, every interview I've seen with her, she just seems so cool and down to earth. I've never met her. I'd love to, but it's kind of just, you know, so cool and down to earth. She was a very good in-ring wrestler, very cute. She also went through the fitness model time period in her life too. So she made those transitions. And I think that that's really, if you're an up-and-coming female wrestler and you want to look to somebody who was successful in the big time, in WWE, and still doing all the things that she's always has been, she's the perfect role model and person to look to for that. And I think she's really the top-notch, you know, competitor when it comes to female wrestlers. She wasn't the best technical wrestler of every female I've ever seen, but nothing like that, but she was good at everything, all those aspects, on the mic, in the ring, and obviously her looks to boot as well. And it was nice when she had her run, because it was a good, I have to say, probably what, like 7 years maybe, where she was in, you know, a leader in that women's division.
I never understood what people saw in Trish Stratus to the extent that she gets praised. I don't think she was terrible, but I don't know. I never, she never clicked with me. I don't know what it is. And you know, well, if you know, that's dangerous for me to say because I mean, yeah, it is. Canadian wrestling fans are like super defensive about, and like, you know, if you're a wrestler and you're Canadian, too. Yeah, if you're a wrestler and you're Canadian, like that, there's a level below which you cannot sink. And yeah, I don't know why. I never got it with her.
Like I said, she was not the best in-ring technician for women. She was not. She can do some basic holds, a good kind of series of moves, and actual Irish whip type moves that don't look awkward. That's one of my biggest pet peeves in women matches when they try to, and they do Irish whip moves, and it's like, this looks so, it looks like me trying to dance like
a river dance or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Or that, or even just like a slow waltz. Like I'm trying to I'm sorry, I keep stepping on your feet, you know? And that's what it reminds me of, where it's very cautious and awkward. And most of those things, like, am I hitting the ropes right? They slow down like crazy, you know, almost to a stop when they hit the ropes. You know, Trish didn't do that. She actually had some good smooth matches where things looked very believable. Wasn't the best, but again, I think she did everything well, and she was also a very good valet as well too, which that can be kind of not something that you could easily do both of. There are some girls that are great valets but not so good wrestlers, and then there's some that are good wrestlers that probably put them with somebody and they don't really know how to further that storyline. She did great at everything. Wasn't perfect at any one thing, but I think if you're going to model yourself after that, that's probably the best. I would say the best example of that. I get what you're saying, though. She also did receive a lot of, you know, acclaim, and maybe a bit, I'll say, also overrated too, just because of the amount of talk. But I say that all the time. There's always people I say are that I'm fans of, even in other sports, where it's, I like this person, but yeah, they're also overrated too. And so she got a lot of acclaim too, but I think it just might have been.
Oh yeah, I mean, my favorite basketball player ever is Kurt Rambis, but I mean, you know, he's not the. He was not a superstar to the same extent as the other people on that team. So, I mean, I'm not faulting you for having a preference. I'm just saying.
Well, you're also a racist for picking a white guy, so whatever.
With glasses.
With glasses. And awkward. Oh, wait, I already said white. Never mind. And, but, yeah, she also was around for a long time. So that's the other thing, too, with female wrestlers is that longevity. Some of those other ones that had decent success, I mean, what's their normal run? Like 3 years? She was around for a long time. And so I think that kind of goes with the territory as well of she's always going to be highly regarded because of her time and her length of time.
But it's funny you say a long time. I mean, she debuted, I think, in 99, and I think she retired in 06. I mean, and the one aspect where I will really give Trish Stratus credit is like when she came in, she was green. Like she was hired for her look, and she actually worked really hard with this local Toronto trainer, a guy by the name of Ron Hutchison. Mm-hmm. He worked with her and, you know, taught her the fundamentals, and she worked hard at getting to where she was. So by the time she was, you know, wrapping up her career as a wrestler. I mean, if you looked at a tape of what she did then compared to what she did when she started in 99, I mean, the extent to which she improved in 7 years, which in wrestling is not a lot of time. I mean, I remember, you know, I've heard more than one wrestler, and we kind of alluded to this in prior episodes, saying, you know, but from the 80s, I think it was Honky Tonk Man. I mean, he said he'd been a wrestler for 15 years before he got on TV with WWF, and he still felt, you know, his words, he still felt that he wasn't quite ready. Whereas, you know, Trish Stratus was on TV, I don't know for sure, but, you know, probably not more than, you know, 3 months into whatever training she was receiving. So, I mean, that's one area where I'll really give her credit. But, you know, you do see certain female wrestlers that have, I mean, you have to look back further, but I mean, like a Fabulous Moolah, I mean, regardless of what you thought of her while she was alive, I mean, she was around a long time.
She was the first women's champion, right?
I don't know if she was the first, but she had that title for like 50 years or something weird like that. Just because.
Let me look something up here. I think I remember looking up a funny stat one time. So, you know, online and Wikipedia, those kind of sites, they'll put like how long of a reign wrestlers have with certain titles. And number one is Fabulous Moolah, 4 title reigns, but a combined 10,000 days. 10,778 days of being champion.
But I think along with, particularly for a wrestling champion, that needs to be expressed as a ratio for the number of the number of matches you had. Because I'm sure, I mean, just because WWF is so schizophrenic when it comes to women's wrestling, there might have been, like, you know, several years between title defenses within those reigns. Because one thing that, you know, I was doing a bit of research for this episode, I was reading this really interesting article on the WWF women's tag titles that were actually around, you know, well into the 80s. Because I remember there was one team that they were on a few times that I remember in 80s WWF. Do you remember? It was a team from Japan called the Jumping Bomb Angels.
Yes, I do remember them.
They were, at least for a North American audience, because like in Japan, women's wrestling is a whole other thing. That's where, I mean, if you want to see women positioned as wrestlers, that's where you need to look. But I just remember seeing them, and they were doing stuff that, you know, by today's standards probably isn't as spectacular. But at the time, I mean, seeing just any wrestler doing a flying head scissors, let alone a woman, I mean, it was...
Well, that was also the 80s, too, where
that's what I mean, yeah.
People weren't even doing those moves. Yeah, like you said, they weren't doing those moves normally anyway. I mean, that was the era of Hulk Hogan's leg drop is the most devastating freaking move ever.
Well, yeah, and you think about, like, you know, I mean, Lanny Poffa would do a cartwheel, and, like, people would go crazy.
Hey, some of us still can't do cartwheels. Take it easy.
No, I never could, but I'm just saying for a wrestler, I mean, when you think about it, I mean, can you imagine if, you know, somebody like a... Like a, I don't know, like a CM Punk or a Daniel Bryan, like, did a cartwheel. Like, right. I mean, like, instant, like, heel.
Gay! You know what I mean? Like, yeah. The chance you're going to get from the crowd. So, yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I mean, with different eras and that kind of thing. But, yeah, it's so weird. I was looking with Moolah, by the way. So, Moolah won the championship in 1956, and then back and forth. Until Wendy Richter back in 84. Was that at WrestleMania? Or close to it, maybe? Right around that time?
That was before WrestleMania, if I'm remembering correctly. Because at WrestleMania, the original WrestleMania, Wendy Richter beat Leilani Kai for the title.
Oh, that's right. Okay. So if you look at that time period, 56 to 85, we're talking roughly 30 years. There was four title changes, but that was all Moolah. It's like, how many matches were in there? I can't imagine. You know, more than 20 matches total for 30 years.
Or at least like 20 matches that were positioned as title matches, yeah.
Or television matches kind of thing. So what do you think about when valets, like clearly that's what their role is, what they always have been, now all of a sudden become wrestlers? What's your thoughts on that?
If they're talented and can...
Sable or something.
Like, oh, that's retarded. I mean, that... I mean,
she was so bad.
I mean, she was written into storylines, you know, for at the time that were crowd was responding to. And I mean, she, as terrible as of a wrestler as she was, I mean, she's gone on record and said, you know, she didn't want to be a physical competitor, but was kind of thrust into that. But again, I mean, again, it has to. I mean, when you're talking about wrestling, I mean, you're not talking. You know, it's not Olympic judo. You're not talking about like who's the best by, you know, quantifiable means. It's, you know, how is the crowd reacting to it. So I mean, this goes beyond women's wrestling. But I mean, if it doesn't matter if they're the drizzling shits in the ring, if the crowd's reacting to them. So I mean,
that's not really the right way to talk about Mark Mero. Come on.
I mean, personally, I didn't. In general, I don't like it because I find usually the person that they've, or the woman that they're elevating from valet to a wrestler, it just doesn't seem like a natural transition. But again, it comes down to, is there a compelling reason for them to be entering into the ring? Because, I mean, here I'm going back to the 80s. I mean, you had a woman like Elizabeth who was managing on and off, you know, Randy Savage and Hulk Hogan. And then you had a woman like Sherry Martel, who was acting in a managerial capacity as a heel primarily for people like Macho Man and Ric Flair. With her, it worked when she got in the ring because she was actually trained to be a wrestler and was talented in that regard. I mean, they never went there with Elizabeth just because, A, that doesn't strike me that, you know, she had the desire or the training or the wherewithal to participate in a match like that. And if they had, it probably would have been terrible.
I bet Macho Man's like, don't you ever go in the ring, you know, like, because he's still yelling at her.
Yeah.
You know, like, she's like, but I want to give it a try, Randy. No, you won't, you know.
But, yeah, I mean, that's my long-winded answer of just saying, A, if the crowd reacts to it, it's good. And if, from the pure athleticism point of view, if they can go in and wrestle a decent match for their part, then, yeah, I'm all for it.
And a decent match by WWE standards for women, you can get by with virtually nothing. I mean, wasn't Sable's finisher basically just taking her shirt off and handprints on her boobs? You know, I mean, it was like, that's her finishers. So it's like, you can get away with that. It's almost
people, because, I mean, Sable was in a lot of mixed tags and stuff like that. I mean, that's how you can position fundamentally a non-wrestler.
Sure. On a similar note, something that really impressed me is when Stephanie McMahon got into the ring, not just the first time, but repeatedly in a series of matches. And I just thought that was the coolest thing. I mean, I think she's cute too, but just as far as of who she is and the fact that it's like, you don't have to do this by any means. You do not have to do this at all. And she did it. And she, you know, she put herself, I'm sure, time and time again in harm's way with her very limited training she probably got. And I just thought that was the coolest thing. Even like, I mean, obviously Shane McMahon too. I mean, if you talk about that, but the fact that she would do that and became, she was probably a champion too, at least once or twice.
She had one match. It was her against Vince McMahon. And that match was way better than it had any right to be. I mean, the storyline leading up to it, I mean, it was over the top in wrestling, but it was a very visceral storyline where, like, you know, Vince was just being Vince and, you know, talking about how, you know, he didn't have a daughter and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, they just had, I forget what pay-per-view it was on, but, I mean, they had a match and it was just, I mean, you look at that on paper and there's not much there, but... I'll find it and put a link to it in the show notes because I'm sure it's on YouTube or something like that. But the match they wound up having was, I mean, it wasn't, you know, I mean, it's not going to compare to, you know, for two non-wrestlers, it was an unbelievably good match.
Yeah, it's no like Dean Malenko match or anything.
Exactly.
But, here's the thing, and maybe we should do a McMahon episode too. It's something to think about where we just talk about the family. I mean, because... if you're in that family, you have to know that you are going balls out at all times, wherever you can. It's not, there's no holding back. So yeah, Stephanie and Vince, I think I remember that where it was a very like hardcore type, you know, where they're hitting each other with straps and different things. And
yeah, I think it might've been a strap match.
Yeah. So that's that family. I mean, it's a badass freaking family too, you know, because they put everything on the line at all times. And I give her so much credit for doing that because she doesn't have to set foot in a ring ever if she didn't want to. All right, so let me ask you one question to close this one out. We talked about our favorite female wrestlers, but do you have like a favorite just female personality? And let's stick with WWE since that's kind of the basis over the years.
I would say in terms of a character, I would say Sherry Martel. I just always thought that she was super talented. She was a good female wrestler, a really good female wrestler. And, you know, for the time, I mean, some of the stuff you look at now, I mean, it looks silly for right now, but for playing a batshit crazy female heel manager, I just thought she was amazing.
Yeah. Speaking of crazies, how about, remember Luna?
Yeah, Luna was really good too. I didn't know much about her. Like, I kind of missed, that whole, during the Attitude Era, it was, you know, she was part of the Oddities.
Oh, yeah. Before that, I think she was with Goldust.
Yeah.
And maybe Gangrel or something, or she was just...
I missed, because when that Oddities storyline was kind of winding down, that was kind of when I was getting back into wrestling after not really watching between, like, 91 and 97, so... I did.
Oh, so it basically took Insane Clown Posse to get you back into wrestling. Got it. Is that on record? Got it.
That and X-Pac.
X-Pac. I'd say for me, I would have to say...
Oh, my throat's dry. I need some more Faygo. Give me a sec.
Make sure to have a Kool-Aid mustache when you're all through, too. and order like a triple X shirt and shorts that actually go to your ankles, but they're still shorts. That's the true Juggalo way right there.
Exactly.
I have to say for me, my favorite female personality is probably Sunny. I thought she was just great. I mean, obviously looks wise, I thought she was just amazing, but she used to host that Saturday morning. I don't know if you had that in Toronto, but it was like a Saturday morning show with, what was this guy? Todd Pettengill. Remember him? Yeah. You know? By the way, every time I think of Todd Pettengill, I think of the way he would say WWF. Like he'd always say like, over enunciate, like, and the WWF champion.
Yeah, they added like WWF, like that.
Yeah. Way too much. Very awkward.
That drives like quick tangent, like that, and that's strictly an American thing. Is that, and like the other thing, W. Never understood why anyone says that. But, anyways, continue, Sonny.
You could easily pick apart my English all day long. So, Sunny though, but I thought she was just great. I thought she was really funny. She used to do these funny clips, and sometimes they would be like, because this was before the Attitude Era too. So it was kind of real racy, some of the stuff she would do. And it was like, oh, like she might be coming out of the shower with like a towel on, but it wasn't totally overly sexual like it later became in the Attitude Era, where it was almost that kind of what you don't see is better than what you do. And that wasn't really happening so much back then. So whenever she did it, it was like, oh man. And I mean, she had these just amazing photo spreads, and probably the early days of the internet. I remember downloading like Sunny wallpapers and shit like in 95, and just be like, oh yeah, Sunny's awesome. And I thought she was just great. And in interviews, she was always really entertaining. And then later on, she went into ECW. And she had a kind of a decent run in there as a valet, obviously with her then husband, Chris Candido, and all that. And he was in WWE as well. But I just thought she did a great job. I thought she really knew the business properly, knew how to you know, act the part and use the sex appeal, but also know how to use her mouth as well. Not like that, but actually probably like that. And
you're saying. She really... And she's somebody else that, again, like it's in that time period where I really wasn't watching wrestling. So most of what I've seen of her has been in retrospect. But what's insane about her is how young she was when she was at that peak performance period. Like, I don't think she was much older than like 21 or 22 when she was hosting that show that you were talking about. So to have somebody, I mean, particularly a female that's like so... that just got wrestling like that. That's just a real rarity. Because she really knew how to work a crowd, how to, like, she could do everything. She was a good manager. She knew how to do commentary. She just was a really, you know, she was perfect for wrestling.
Yeah, I'm looking it up now. And in 95, when I remember seeing her, she was 23. So she was so young, and she's just this kind of just real, like, cute, sarcastic kind of Jersey girl. But she knew how to really get the crowd going. And then she came back later on with Legion of Doom 2000 or whatever. And I think the Headbangers maybe or something. And just kind of like, then again, in ECW, she had a nice run in there. She went by her actual name.
Don't forget the Smoking Guns.
Oh, Smoking Guns. Yeah. Billy and Bart. Right. So she had a good run in ECW then. And she had a nice feud with Dawn Marie, who then was kind of copying her as part of the gimmick. So like, she went by her name, Tammy Lynn Sitch, and Dawn went by like Dawn Marie Bitch or something. And they kind of had a nice little feud going there. Obviously drugs and some other stuff, as with a lot of wrestlers, and personalities kind of gets in the way and really messes things up. But, you know, I've seen her now. Obviously she doesn't look anywhere near like she was. She's a bit older now, but she's kind of getting back into things. And I think she's kind of doing a little independent circuit right now, which is good for her. Pretty awesome. So I think just the fact that I think it was a timing thing too. I mean, she was great at what she did, but timing wise, mid-90s in those lean years, as you call it, I'm always going to refer to it as that because that's a very easy way to put it. That kind of, they were just getting away with a lot of bullshit, and it's whatever. Some people were watching it, but they didn't care because, hey, Raw was in this little 200-seat, you know, room at the time, not a big deal. And she found a way to get over before it exploded, where everybody got over just for nothing. So
people like Stone Cold and The Rock and, you know, Bret Hart, I guess, too, kind of launched the Attitude Era. it was characters like Sunny that really paved the way, because like you said, I mean, you know, a few years prior to when she was on TV, I mean, you were seeing T.L. Hopper and Fantasio and like Duke the Dumpster Drosy, like, you know, still wrestling was really trying to, or at least WWF at the time was, you know, struggling to find its identity because they were trying to, on a certain level, cling to the, you know, more cartoony characters that we're all used to from the 80s, but, you know, the fans weren't into it anymore, and it was characters like Sunny that really pushed the envelope. I mean, she gets a lot of credit. I mean, she was, in a lot of ways, she was before her time, but in a weird way, and I don't know if this makes sense, she was kind of like, she was what was necessary to sort of push the envelope to enable something like the Attitude Era to evolve.
Oh, no question. I mean, there was all that rumor going around with her and Shawn Michaels. And I think, didn't Brett do a cut a promo one time saying like sunny days ahead? Or
Shawn said that about Brett.
Oh, to Brett. That's right. And so, you know, you had that whole thing going on, that basically the two top guys at the time, you know, and then they bring her in. So, yeah, I just think it was a great timing for her as well. Much like Elizabeth was great timing in the 80s. You know, and was necessary then. She didn't do a whole lot besides look pretty, but, you know, she still was compelling enough for people to care about her. And I guess that's really what it's all about, you know, even if you're not.
And it was something different. I mean, you didn't see, because you'd seen women in wrestling before, but they were often positioned as, like, you know, crazy chicks, or they would be out there yelling or stuff like that. But she was, for the WWF audience, she was kind of the first, at least in terms of being on national television, kind of like, you know, a femme fatale kind of character that, you know, people just weren't accustomed to seeing. And you had having her paired with somebody as completely over the top as Macho Man. I mean, I think that was a big reason why Macho Man got over, because you had, and, you know, and I could see why a female audience would be drawn to that dichotomy, because you've got this beautiful woman that's calm and poised and doesn't really fit in with the world of wrestling, but she's alongside this completely cocained out, like, over the top, walks into frame and twirls, and, you know, talks about having condominiums on the moon type of guy. Like, you know, that's the Odd Couple. That's, you know, a compelling storyline and a compelling dramaturgical device, not to get too profound.
That was pretty profound, though. Some big words there.
Maybe we should end it before this gets too Bob Backlund.
Yeah, well, I mean, hey, you brought up Macho Man, and you got the genius Lanny Poffo, so you've got some good company there with some of the higher educated wrestlers. But it's also good to finish on too, talking about Elizabeth. People sometimes call her the First Lady of Wrestling, whether anyone agrees with that or not. That's a title that's kind of been bestowed upon her. So probably a good way to finish out this episode of Shoot Radio, talking about women in the industry. If you want, give us some feedback. You find us on iTunes. Leave us a positive review and 5 stars if you wouldn't mind. If you want to send us an email, you can reach us at shootradioshow@gmail.com, or of course on social media, facebook.com/shootradio and twitter.com. You can follow us at shootradio. For Chris, I am Johnny P. We'll talk to you next time.
You can find more great podcasts at lifestylepodnetwork.com.au.
Boring finish there. I didn't know what else to say, but that's all right.
Oh, maybe I'll find like a Sunny clip and throw it in or something like that.
Play the just play your theme song, that I Know You Want Me. That was awesome. I love it. As soon as that hit, and I was like, yes, I'm like, she's coming out. I hope it's like a schoolgirl outfit or something. She was so great.